Well, I'm very pleased to be the person introducing John Clark today. My name's Pam. I'm with the Toronto Mobilization for Global Justice. And people probably know, but the Toronto Mobilization for Global Justice has been active since the big demonstrations against the WTO in Seattle in 1999. And since then has been building and building the coalition to get the word out about the globalization agenda and taking it on. And just in April, we were able to organize 19 buses and bring over 800 people to Quebec City. And I think one of the fantastic things that the OCAP campaign has done has really put the question of the Harris agenda, the Tory agenda here in Ontario, forefront in people's minds. And I think what Toronto Mobilization for Global Justice has appreciated about it is that it allows us to very concretely link what is happening with the trade deals that are being established around the world and what is happening in our own backyard. Most notably, when Mike Harris took office, and one amongst the first things that he did was cut welfare by 21% and absolutely exacerbated the homeless situation for the poorest of the poor in the province of Ontario. And in the last 6 years, those attacks have been unrelenting, and we see even more attacks are coming down from this provincial government that we saw announced in the May 9th budget and so forth. There's been increased attacks on labor rights and so forth, clawbacks in terms of health and safety provisions and so forth, and it's clear that this government is not going to abandon its agenda until we pick up the fight. And so for that reason, we're very happy to have John Clark with us today to talk about the OCAP campaign. But I'm also very happy to be here today because I just came back from the QP Ontario convention, and amongst the many resolutions that were discussed, the QP Ontario division, and I'll just mention this since Bob made an announcement about it, voted overwhelmingly to oppose Plan Colombia. But more importantly, it also voted overwhelmingly to support the OCAP campaign and to send delegates and put resources into the June 15th and 16th meeting. But most significantly of all, I think, is the question that because of the focus on the OCAP campaign, we were able to put the question of a political general strike back on the agenda in this province amongst trade unionists and working people and social justice organizations, and QP Ontario voted to call on the OFL for a general strike against the provincial government before December 2001 to correspond with the activities that will be taking place this fall. No further ado, I'll hand it over to John. Thanks very much.
Thanks very, very much. I'm going to talk about the Harris agenda and where I think it fits, and that's true, but I also want to talk very specifically about the campaign of economic disruption that we are, it's got beyond anything, I could say we now, in the sense of OCAP, that OCAP originally sought to initiate, that is now really gathering momentum. I'm aware, as I introduce this question, that there is in the room perhaps a varied level of a familiarity with the campaign. There are a number of people I know to be utterly familiar, and I'm going to be going over ground that people have seen covered already. But I want to talk in some detail about the campaign, where it comes from and how it's being delivered. And I hope those people who've heard it before will just bear with me. In terms of the campaign that we're taking up, before I outline exactly what we're trying to do, I think it's important to deal with the context. And the context is precisely the enemy, the Harris government, and the nature of that regime. I made a statement at one meeting, I remember, where I described the sort of the level or layer of petty exploiters who make up so much of the Harris cabinet. You know, the Ernie Eves from the nominee of the Chamber of Commerce of Parry Sound, and Harris himself from North Bay. And I made an observation that it was almost like seeing the Parry Sound Kiwanis Club hold state power. And somebody in the audience said that they thought that was incorrect, that in fact Harris was the embodiment of finance capital. I actually think that both things are true, that finance capital has precisely put in place a regime that is a purveyor of retrogression and backwardness and narrow-mindedness, precisely because it suits its purposes to allow such an attack dog to do the job here in Ontario. And so we've now gone through 6 years of this regime of unbridled social retrogression at every level. And I think as we talk about the Harris regime, those people who have been involved in anti-globalisation struggles can only see one common theme after another crop up. Harris's big slogan was that Ontario is now open for business. And that, of course, is exactly the essence of the regime. The whole question is, as with generally the agenda of global capital, is to remove all barriers to the making of profit and the enrichment of the wealthiest interests at the expense of everybody else. And Harris, of course, couldn't personify that kind of approach to political dealing with any more clarity than he does. He's falling disastrously in the polls, I see, today, and yet, despite the fact that his regime is beginning to lose its gloss, at the same time, there's another article pointing out that corporate donations to the Tory party are double what they are to anybody else. And so clearly we're dealing here with, you know, the regime of choice of Bay Street and Wall Street. And I'm not suggesting for a moment, lest my remarks make anybody think that that's what I'm implying, that in some ways the agenda begins and ends with Harris. It's much broader than that. It's much broader than the Tory regime. But there is no question that in a very real sense that regime is indeed a regime that's been sent in to do a job and is doing it with, I think, an unprecedented level of enthusiasm. So the elements of the regime that is implemented are obvious, and this is where, again, I think the link is very, very clear to the broader agenda of global capital. The question is the removal of anything that stands in the way of enrichment. So all the elements of the network of social provision that used to exist are being systematically dismantled. Those elements of legislation that deal with workers' rights are being systematically undermined. Anything that smacks of environmental protection is not common sense and needs to be removed. Services are to be dismantled, reduced in a way where the most profitable sections will be sold off and privatised, and the rest will be allowed to degrade and erode. And the impact of the agenda has been a startling transformation of the life of this province. And, you know, I mean, one could mention a litany of things. You could mention Walkerton. You could mention in Toronto the incredible situation that OCAP has dealt with in terms of the growth of poverty on a scale that just boggles the mind, the reduction of welfare rates. That led to an explosion in homelessness, so that you now have some 2,000 people a month being evicted in the city of Toronto alone. That's the people who actually go through the legal process of being evicted. For every person who's evicted, there's two or three who give up and leave. An explosion of the number of people on the streets. When we marched on Queen's Park last June 15th, we were aware that the Toronto Disaster Relief Committee had tracked 26 deaths of homeless people in the central part of the city so far that year. And I might add that 15 of those had been active in the work of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. So we took it somewhat personally. And at the same time, and this again I think is a highly common theme, as the agenda is implemented and as they start to remove the elements of social provision, the alternative method of regulating people is used, which is that of physical repression and the billy club. And the elements of that in the Tory agenda are very, very clear. The super jails, the Safe Streets Act, the beefing up of the police, the grooming of Julian Fantino for eventual political office. I mean, all these things are I think, part of the common theme. So in the face of that incredible agenda, the question that has, I think, plagued movements here in Ontario, be it the labour movement, be it social movements of one kind or another, has been how do you, in fact, challenge an agenda of that kind? Obviously, Harris is not particularly interested in being popular with people who think as we do. I think he's quite reconciled to the fact that the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty doesn't like him very much. So we haven't really thought that that winning the hearts and minds of Mike Harris was exactly a winning proposition or a possibility. Now, there have been, of course, many, many struggles against this government. When I talk in terms of a retreat and in terms of a malaise, I'm not for a moment trying to suggest that there hasn't been many hard-fought attempts and even a few modest victories in terms of taking on the government and its agenda. But still, I think there has been fundamentally at root in the movement's and in the resistance struggles that have taken place, a failure to come to terms with the kind of regime that exists, and as a result, a failure to really seriously grapple with the kind of methods of resistance that could actually make a difference. Harris said, he really does have a sort of for such a dull-witted political thug, he really does have a way with words. And he on one occasion stated that he didn't care if every blade of grass at Queen's Park was trampled down by protesters. They were not his people, and he was going to continue with his agenda. Which, you know, to give the devil his due, if there were others on our side who had the same level of intransigence and determination, we'd all be doing a lot better, quite frankly. I mean, that's how he feels. I mean, he doesn't, for years, he and his people, as they were looking to reshape the Conservative Party and take control of it, they sat around and they talked about what they would like to do to unions and immigrants and what they would like to do to welfare recipients and what they would like to do with people who were worried about the environment and all those things. And finally, they've got the opportunity and they love it. They're having the time of their lives. They're not interested in what we think or what we say. And if we don't like it, that's too bad. We're special interests or whatever. And they proceed with that agenda with a great deal of determination. And so the point that I think comes home is that the concept of protest in that limited sense has become outdated in the face of confronting a government like that of Harris. If you believe that what it is necessary to do is to mobilise a body of opinion to challenge the government, to create the sense that that's a large-scale body of opinion, and make, as it were, a moral case against the government that's hard-hitting and insightful, that will somehow get the government to respond, that has really run its course. It's simply not going to happen. They simply don't care. And I can't emphasise that point enough, because that old method of thinking still does dominate people's practice to a huge degree. I mean, I've used this example many times, but it just grates on me, and I have to say it again today. Is I don't know how many people at rallies against the Harris government, somewhere in their remarks, use these words: "I hope you're listening, Mike Harris." And it seems to me that's symptomatic of something very, very important. That the time has come to recognise that he's not listening. The time has come to recognise that you're not going to be able to make a case that's based on reason and compassion and moral outrage and all these things and get the government to respond. And so the question becomes one of moving beyond, I use the terms a little arbitrarily, I suppose, but moving beyond protest and moving into resistance. And that seems to be the enormously important leap that has in part been made, but needs to be made very emphatically and very, very clearly. So in terms of OCAP's contribution to developing this kind of thinking and this kind of method of resistance, we, of course, are an organisation, and I don't for one moment want to exaggerate our power and our strength. We're a largely Toronto-based organisation with a constituency of people made up largely of poor and homeless people. We're not the labour movement, we don't have huge resources, but what we have tried to do is think through how we can actually struggle effectively. And that's dominated our thinking, it's plagued our thinking, because, you know, we've watched a lot of people die amongst the homeless. I got home last night and there's a message from a social worker on the phone just pointing out that this man, Pete, who comes into the Parkdale office every day with a little dog, is dead, and that his funeral is going to be next week. And we get those kinds of calls all the time from people that we know well, people that we work with all the time. I mean, Pete was an extraordinary man. He came from Cape Croker. He was a member of the Ojibwe Nation. One day he brought in a tape recording.